Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Big topics, big ideas, big sky. Montana Talks.
And big news, by the way. Yeah, I just heard from Judge Dan Wilson in the Flathead Valley of Montana. He ran for the Montana Supreme Court last year. And he's going to run again in the upcoming 2026 Montana Supreme Court race. So Judge Dan Wilson just broke the news that he will be running for the Montana Supreme Court, which I just think is great because, you know, a lot of these statewide office holders, they ran for statewide office and they came up short during their first run. But they took the apparatus, the campaign team, and the name ID, and they built upon it, and they expanded upon it, and then they won the statewide race. And so great to hear the Judge Dan Wilson stepping back into the fight for the Montana Supreme Court. All right. Hey, over the next few days, we're going to jump right into it here. Over the next few days, it's going to be some marathon floor sessions in the Montana legislature in Helena, as I understand it. And we've got State Senator Greg Hertz out of Polson with us on the phone lines right now. Senator Hertz, thanks for joining us this morning.
You bet, Aaron, and thanks for having me on. Yeah, we do. I mean, we're day 72, so we only got a couple of weeks left in the session. So this is when things really get done and things are moving around. So we do have some major sessions. And we got some big items still on the table, income tax relief, which I fully support. We need to get to a flat tax. That's my goal. That's the governor's goal and a lot of individuals' goal. That may not happen until 28-29, but we'll get there. Plus, we need to provide income tax relief for middle-income families also. The big picture, though, is property tax relief, obviously, and, you know, we're focused on that. There's a lot of ideas, a lot of spaghetti on the wall, and we're just trying to coalesce and see what where we can get to and something that people can agree on.
Well, and sometimes a deadline is the best way to force you to finally write that paper, to finally get that job done. It's like, well, if we're meeting a deadline. I saw the most concerning headline that I saw this morning was the Lee newspaper's headline, "No Clear Path Forward for Property Tax Relief in the Final Days of the Legislative Session." And I see you were quoted here saying, yeah, there's just no consensus at this point. So hopefully the fast approaching deadline will force a consensus and a good one at that, because early on it sounded like there was by and large agreement, even across the aisle agreement on the big picture perspective with regard to property tax relief.
Well, there was, Aaron, and obviously property taxes all go to your schools. Some of it comes to the state, but it goes back to the schools and local government. So obviously you could reduce property taxes if they all reduce their budget. That's not realistic. So all we're really left with is shifting taxes from one taxpayer to another. Initially, we were focused on non-resident taxpayers, and then we started capturing a lot of Montana residents who pay income tax here, shifted over to businesses like utility companies, whether a co-op or a regulated utility. Those taxes go up significantly on some of these proposals, and guess what? Those taxes end up right back on your utility bill.
That's
and
right.
So you are indirectly paying them.
You still pay for it. All right. Well, hold that thought. More with State Senator Greg Hertz right after the break. Tax day, less than a week away. That's what I want to talk about with Senator Hertz. Stand by.
It's April 9th, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. Today is National Name Yourself Day. Normally, I go by CJ Papa, but today, I'll be Anchorman. Studies have shown that there are links between a person's name and their personalities. It's called the Dorian Gray Effect, named for Oscar Wilde's novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray. Also on this date, it was wedding bells for the British royal family in 2005 as Prince Charles married Camilla Parker Bowles. It was his second marriage. He was first wed to Lady Diana Spencer, later known as Princess Diana. In 1967, the best-selling airplane in history had its maiden voyage, the Boeing 737, a short to medium-range plane. And in 1950, comedian Bob Hope made his first ever television appearance on the Star Spangled Review. Previously, Hope had resisted being on TV, saying radio was a softer racket. I'm CJ Papa. That's your Fox Daily Snapshot.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen, and subscribe.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is often laced into illicit drugs and used to make fake versions of prescription pills. You can't see it, taste it, or smell it. Suppliers mix fentanyl into their products because it's potent and cheap, and the dealer might not even know. Keep yourself and others safe by knowing the real deal on fentanyl. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right. Luckily, State Senator Greg Hertz has some time before he has to run into his next committee meeting at the Capitol in Helena, so he'll be able to stick around with us for a few minutes here. Yeah, so I want to go back to talking property tax relief, talking income tax relief. I totally agree with his remarks about the need for a flat tax across the board. But the real reason I wanted, and I want to get his take on the nine Senate Republicans who have basically now been rebuked by the state GOP. And what does that mean in the Senate here in the final couple of weeks or so? But Senator Hertz, yeah, of course, you know, the main reason I wanted to get you on today was I've had a lot of people email me as they're doing their taxes, as they're getting ready to file the taxes, or as they've already filed their taxes. You know, tax day is less than a week away now, April 15th. But I've had a lot of people say, hey, wait a minute. The legislature just cut income taxes last session. They cut income taxes the session before. So they said, why am I now owing the state on my taxes? They said that they now owe, instead of getting a refund or owing nothing, they're owing the state in taxes. And everything I've gathered so far was it doesn't sound like people got a tax hike. But they didn't get enough money withheld from their paychecks. What are you tracking, Senator Hertz?
Yeah, you know, Aaron, that's exactly right. Unfortunately, a lot of people equate how much they paid in taxes by how much their refund was or how much was due. And when you really drill down into it, and if their income was the same, their taxes on that income didn't change significantly. It was either down a little bit or up just a hair. But it was withholding tables. And most employers, like myself, we use third-party software vendors to calculate our payroll. And some of those vendors did not have the correct withholding information, and so they were under-withholding. So people didn't get the refund that they were normally expecting. Others were okay, but there was a lot of problems in that withholding tables that those vendors did. I'm trying to track that down, communicating with the Department of Revenue, and kind of see what happened there and why the system broke down.
Yeah, because you're right. Even if you didn't pay more in taxes this year than you did last year, you know, to get hit with a bill when you file your taxes can always be tough because it's something that people don't budget for, didn't necessarily plan for. And especially knowing that we cut taxes last session, it would catch people by surprise. So potentially a withholding tables issue with Department of Revenue you're following up. And then you were also telling me kind of off air that some of it could have been, you know, software implementation from some third party, groups that work with businesses on what to withhold, et cetera.
Yeah, I would really encourage people to, and they usually do, look at your taxes, what you paid this year, not what you refund or what you owed, but look at the taxes, figure out how much you need to have withheld, go talk to your payroll HR person at your employer, and get it adjusted so you don't have this problem next year. Now, there were some people who got caught up due to special circumstances and just due to some changing of the way deductions worked, and those people did end up paying some more taxes, but the vast majority of it had to do with withholdings or what people were estimating their payments to be also.
Yeah, okay, that was one of the follow ups that I had as well, because I understand there was not only did you reduce taxes, but there was a tax simplification bill. So what were some of the deductions that were done away with that might have snagged some people?
So the first thing we did is we matched the federal standard deduction. If you're single, you get $15,000. If you're married, you get $30,000. So that just took a lot of people off. No more deductions anymore. But there were some special deductions that we had in Montana, like health insurance that you were paying on your own. There was a federal tax deduction of $5,000 maximum for single, $10,000 for married. But when we ran the model, a lot of that with that increased standard deduction going from about $5,000 for a single up to $15,000 and the same $30,000 for a married couple, that took care of most of those. But there were a few people who kind of got hung up and ended up owing some more.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people, what they do is they might file their federal taxes, married filing jointly, but then for the state, it could be advantageous to do married filing separately. And I understand that was kind of a category where they noticed that they might have had an issue with withholdings or something to that effect.
Well, and that was under the old rules, too. So when we went to filing jointly, we adjusted the joint rate, just like they are in the federal. So it was more advantageous to file jointly. I think some of the problem is people are comparing current law with previous law where they were allowed to use married filing separately on the same form. But then also your standard deduction changes considerably when you do that. And so there's just a lot of confusion out there. I think people are not comparing apples to apples. But, we're going to go forward here. We're going to reduce income taxes again this session, and I'm hoping to make them retroactively to January 1st of 2025 to really help individuals. And it looks like in the middle, your taxes will go from 5.9 to 4.7 immediately in 2025 if I can get my way with that. So, but we're still working through the process.
Yeah, because everything I've gathered, it seems like there's basically three different approaches that have been, somewhat moving forward or not moving forward. There seems to be kind of no consensus as of yet. But I like the governor's approach. I like what you outlined earlier, which is just a flat tax across the board tax relief. We've got a budget surplus that, our money is there. Our money should come back. But apparently there's a couple of other options. One, as I understand it, would have a trigger to where, it might target the immediate income tax relief to the middle class. But then there would be a trigger put in that would then lower it across the board elsewhere as well, based off of certain triggers, as I understand it. But Senator Greg Hertz would know the answer to that question. So we're going to start there right after this quick break.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
The stock market is not the economy, certainly. Its euphoria and gloom are dramatic and well-publicized. The changes in the overall economy can't be boiled down to a simple number and take weeks or more to show up in data. For all the talk of trillions of wealth being wiped out in recent days, there have been equally eye-popping changes on the upside during the market's bull run before that. In reality, of course, those gyrations are just numbers on a page, with concrete meaning only if the assets they represent are liquidated. Lower or even dramatically lower stock prices don't put people out of work, and the connection between portfolio values and current spending is nowhere near as strong as some make it out to be. But the market is a sentiment index on the immediate future, and its precipitous fall warns us of just how much those sentiments have changed for the worse. It is people and institutions voting with dollars on where they think the return on those assets is greatest, and right now that is anywhere but in shares of U.S. companies. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Fox rocks.
I'm Monica DeLuca. The drummer for Blondie, Clem Burke, has died at the age of 70. A statement signed by co-founders Debbie Harry and Chris Stein says his legacy will live on through the tremendous amount of music he created and the countless lives he touched. They announced his passing after a private battle with cancer. And there will be 7 new albums of unreleased music from The Boss. Springsteen announced announcing he'll be putting out a box set on June 27th and titled it Tracks 2, The Lost Albums, which collects 83 songs that were recorded across four decades. In a press release, he says, quote, I've played this music to myself and often close friends for years now. I'm glad you'll get a chance to finally hear them. That's Fox Rocks on Fox News.
Okay.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I'll take 4-7. You know, right now, most Montanans pay this 5.9% income tax rate. And that's after we've lowered income taxes. I mean, it was even worse 2 years ago, 4 years ago, you name it. But we still, even now, even after the last two legislative sessions cutting income taxes, we still, as a state, have the worst income taxes in the Rocky Mountain Western region here that we're a part of. And so, and they're sitting on a budget surplus. So we've got to make it happen. Sounds like there's a consensus that may be in the works here. Maybe it gets us down to 4-7. I was joking with Senator Hertz over the break. I like the sound of 4-6 better because it sounds like 4-0-6, but I'll take 4-7, Senator Hertz.
Yeah, that's my plan to trigger us down to 4-7, hopefully by 29. But those triggers will just be based on how are we doing, how are we performing, how's revenue being collected, what's our rainy day funds look like. Because you never know when a recession might come along and all of a sudden income tax collections really drop to the bottom. I think we can get there. A lot of people are getting behind that. Probably with the exception of the Democrats, I don't think they're going to let go until a flat 4-7. But the Republicans, we control both chambers, and I think we can get it done.
Yeah, and very, very clearly, if they can unite on anything, it seems to me across the board income tax relief should be the easiest thing to unite around. Now, maybe it's this proposal versus that proposal, but it sounds like what you're proposing would be kind of a compromise in between the Yakovitch bill in the Senate, Speaker Litter's proposal in the House, and what the governor's been proposing, and then I think Senator Kastmeyer's bill on that front. And so sounds like what you're pitching would be sort of a compromise, a blend of the three, shall we say.
Yeah, correct. And, I never look at, well, who's carrying this bill or that bill. I'm more of a concept type guy, long-term guy. And see what direction we go. But I've talked to, the parties involved and other legislators around the Capitol and even including the governor's staff. I think he wants to get to a flat tax, and the vast majority of us also do.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, I've heard people, talk about the legislature, and they're like, oh, yeah, some people will vote against good bills just because they don't like the sponsor. And it's like, oh, come on, people. Like, this is why we can't have nice things. And I announced the news earlier, too. I mean, judicial reform. We got to get judicial reform across the finish line as well. But I'm very pleased to hear that Judge Dan Wilson's taken another shot at the Supreme Court and building on what he did in 2024. Because at the end of the day, you guys can, it's just people like you, you're sacrificing time away from your business, you're sacrificing time away from your families, and you're doing all this work, committee assignments, marathon floor sessions, but then some liberal judge in Missoula just says, nah, I don't like it. And it's like, it's just an outrageous slap in the face to the people of Montana.
It really is. I'm so happy to hear Dan Wilson's going to be running again. I fully supported him. But one of our top priorities, including the governor, is get the partisan elections for the Montana Supreme Court. When people vote for judges, they have no idea who they are or what they are. And just because they put a partisan label after their name, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to lean one way or the other, do partisan issues. But I think what it does reflect is that they're going to look at the Constitution, and they're going to lay a law on the Constitution. You're not going to legislate from the bench. And those are the problems that we've been facing so many times here in the Montana legislature, when the judiciary just wants to change what we've done or just avoid what we've done.
On the state budget bill heads to the Montana Senate was a headline from the Montana Television Network.
I've seen, you know, the Montana Freedom Caucus is saying, well, look, this budget would increase spending by 11%. I think that includes some federal dollars as well. What do you look at when you're looking at, you know, the top line for a budget on if it's spending too much, and where do these competing budget proposals sit when you look at the top lines?
Well, unfortunately, the conservatives in the legislature, we're not really in control of what's going on with the budget. So, and that's right. For the next biennium, it's about 11% increase in the overall budget. And I just talked to Carl Glamp, who's the chair of Senate Finance and Claims. He's not happy. I would rather see something about maybe a 6% growth overall for the biennium, about a 3%, you know, growth each session. Each year, and to me that makes a lot more sense, but it doesn't look like we're going to get there. You know, the Democrats and some of the more moderate Republicans are definitely in control of that state budget, and that's probably where we're going to end up in that 11% overall range for the next 2 years.
And speaking of control and the division within the Montana GOP caucus, particularly in the Senate, but the House side, I mean, they've had some votes, too, where you're like, what are some of these Republicans doing on some of these things, right? But you know, the big news, of course, was that the Montana Republican Party came out and officially rebuked these nine Republican state senators that have been, you know, voting with Democrats when it comes to key rules and committee assignments. First off, aside from Medicaid expansion, which a lot of us didn't like, but aside from that, when it comes to policy, are they also voting against? Do you see them also voting against their caucus on other policies as well?
Which was really interesting. So obviously, Senator Aylesworth. We did censure him. Almost got to the point of expulsion, which I wanted to happen. But it's really odd because you'll see not only him, but some others, members of the nine, who are voting against judicial reform that was promoted by none other than Senator Aylesworth and others, and now he's voting against his judicial reform bills. So that's been very frustrating when it comes to that. And there's also many other policy issues, too, that you know, very conservative policy issues that it looks like, you know, they're throwing some votes towards the Democrats. But, you know, that happens up here every session. You know, people kind of figure out their little coalition, and they start trying to cut deals and move legislation forward, including whether it's money or policy.
Yeah, and that judicial reform, it's like seriously, whether you call yourself a I'm spacing the name all of a sudden. No matter what you call your little caucus, right? It's like, okay, but at the end of the day, if you get it across the finish line and the governor signs it into law and then these judges do whatever the heck they want anyway, what, to quote Hillary Clinton, what difference does it make? And so it should be in everybody's interest to rein in this lawless judiciary. And so, yeah, look, okay, initially they said it was about committee assignments. Okay, yeah, but then an olive branch was extended, so move on. But yet it's still going on. How do you see... Do you think that the GOP rebuke will do anything? It seems like so far, you know, it doesn't seem to be hurting them in their districts. They're just going back to their constituents, you know, bragging about standing up to party bosses. But how is this going to impact the Senate in the final few weeks here?
So I think we've been mending some fences. We did finally pass final joint rules and Senate rules yesterday. On second reading on the floor, so we're getting there. The Senate's always been run, if you got 26 people on the Senate floor, you can pretty much do everything you want. But the committee assignments on day one, that was uncalled for. What they should have done is just gave a one-day notice, hey, we're going to rearrange the committees unless you do. And that's happened in the past. Then you go into the president's office, majority leader's office, and say, hey, look, guys, we don't like this committee report. Can you stand up and make some changes? Because if you don't, we're going to make the changes on the floor. And that's how things have always worked for over 100 years. You go back, you know, you don't do things on the floor unless you must have to do it there. You go back and you talk. It's cooler heads. People do the right thing and sit down and realize, okay, yeah, we probably made some mistakes on this or that, and we agree. We'll need to change those.
Do you think anything could be done? Could anything have been done? Could anything be done? Or is it just kind of is what it is?
You know, at this point in the game, it kind of is what it is. Passing legislation up here is all about relationships. And I've rarely, if ever, traded votes for this bill or that bill. I look at each bill, no matter who the carrier, does it make sense for my constituents? Does it make sense for the people of Montana? You don't want to burn bridges up here because there's a lot of individual legislators who will hold a grudge forever, and they'll just vote against your bill because something you did. I try to stay out of that fracas and try to just work with everybody and make sure we've got good legislation. And unfortunately, there's a lot of others who just don't do that. And, you know, these nine legislators are basically have burned a lot of bridges, and they're causing some problems within the Republican caucus. I hope we can get over that, but I'm not sure we can here by the end of the session.
I'm just checking some Montana Talks app messages. Sorry, I'm a little late getting to these, but yeah, a lady in Deer Lodge just messaged us. Montana income taxes went up for many because the Department of Revenue is now mirroring the federal forms for itemized deductions. So many of us lost deductions as the forms changed, and that increased our income taxes due this year. DOR should have anticipated this. And that just is another reminder of what you said. This is another reminder of why we need more income tax relief once again, right, Senator Hertz?
Yeah, correct. And that's why it's so important we just end up heading towards that flat tax. It'll help everybody.
All right. Let's see. Yeah, coming up after the break here, we'll have phone lines open for you. If you got something you want to talk about, plus I want to get into tariffs. Senator Steve Daines had a back and forth with President Trump's U.S. Trade Representative nominee, Jamison Greer. Maybe I'll get to that and more. But yeah, phone lines are open for you. Senator Hertz, thanks for your time this morning. We've got about 30 seconds to go. What else do you want to tell folks across Montana?
Well, I mean, the property tax, we are looking at that, but I don't want to hurt Montanans. And then we have this whole problem in Billings, Montana, that caps their mills. And some of the things we're looking at would dramatically change things in Billings, take $6 to $10 million straight off their budget and shift taxes, which just isn't fair to a lot of folks in Billings. So it's going to be difficult, but hopefully we can get there.
Well, our friend David Noble said they got a lot of empty buses driving around if they're looking for ways to save money. That was the idea David Noble threw out there. But and they've had growth. Why can't they help give more relief, too? But either way, Senator Hertz, great to hear from you. Appreciate your time. Phone lines are open for you. Back after this. Spring.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Ross Perot. You people need to hear what Ross Perot said back in the 1990s. Some of you remember what he said back in the 1990s. Jesse Waters had an incredible segment last night talking about tariffs and trade and more. I want to get to a portion of what Senator Steve Daines had to say in his back and forth with USTR, U.S. Trade Representative nominee Jamison Greer during his confirmation hearing yesterday, talking Montana agriculture and more. We'll get to that here in just a second. But first, yeah, like I say, phone lines are open for you, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app. In fact, let me sneak on some messages here real fast. Fred in the Flathead. Talking about taxes, he makes a great point here. You know, he's been down in California fighting fires down there, helping them out as well. But he says this, California has lower income tax rates of 4% than Montana does for taxable incomes between $25,000 and around $40,000. Anyway, He's putting that in light for when the legislature, this is why the Montana legislature needs to lower the rates for all incomes. And it's so important that Fred makes this point here, because this is what the Democrats are trying to do now. The Democrats are getting smarter about this in the legislature now. They want to make it look like they're supporting tax cuts while they keep the worst tax rates in the Rocky Mountain West in place for people of upper incomes. They want a California-style tax policy. Hasn't worked in California, right? Some of you fled California because of that and so much else, right? That's what the Democrats are trying to do here. And I think some of the Republicans are going along with that California-style system where, we'll give these people tax relief, but you other people don't get tax relief. Why do you think so many of the Democrats voted for it? That's why the Republican Senate bill is not a Republican bill. That's why I prefer the governor's approach, like Charlie Kirk and Don Jr. do. But also, it sounds like what Senator Hertz is proposing is more on track as well here. So Fred in the Flathead, thanks for sending that message. Let's see. I'll save a couple of other messages here for the trade conversation. Looks like Stephen Three Forks wants to weigh in on income taxes. So let's stay on that topic here for a second. Steve, what's on your mind? Thanks for the call.
Well, yes, Aaron, you had a bunch of guys there talking about income tax and how they want to lower it and all that stuff. Where in the Constitution do I find income tax? I know where it's at, but...
Yeah, it was an amendment, right? Yeah, it was an amendment later on.
In order for an amendment to pass, three-fourths of the states have to approve it. Red Beckman, who was a patriot from Billings, went to all 48 states that were states at the time to see whether they passed the 16th Amendment. No state passed the 16th Amendment. The president just went before Congress and said, it appears the 16th Amendment has been ratified, filed all the paperwork away. Nobody bothered to look until Red Beckman went and looked. Now, if I look at the Communist Manifesto, which we practice all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto in America, that is the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto. The fifth one is the central bank, Federal Reserve. We were not to have a Federal Reserve. Who do we owe how many trillion dollars to? The Federal Reserve, which is the 8 richest families in the world. Anyway, we practice all 10 planks. First need to get a constitution. It's a citizen's rule book.
All right. Well, appreciate the phone call. Great to hear from you. Yeah, the 16th Amendment here. I pulled out my little pocket constitution courtesy of Hillsdale College. Ratified February 3rd, 1913. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. And, man, look at what has happened since that point. And remember what? Newt Gingrich made this point. For the first 150 years of this country, how did they get revenue? From tariffs from other countries. But then they got the power to tariff you and to tariff me and to tariff us. And isn't it just funny, the liberal mob media and the Democrats and the panickins and the never-Trumpers, they are just outraged that somebody in another country might get tariffed. But same liberal media and the same Democrats that will tariff you in a second. They're fighting you. I mean, if we want to just replace the word income taxes with that word, they have no problem tariffing you. But big problems tariffing China. All right, Steve, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Here we go. Ross Perot in the 1990s, if you don't remember it, or you weren't born yet. I know we've got some young listeners here, too. Yeah, here's what he said.
Remember that giant sucking sound? We have got to stop sending jobs overseas. To those of you in the audience who are business people, pretty simple. If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south the border, pay $1 an hour for labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south.
They called Ross Perot crazy, but after 30 years, they call him right.
Yeah, great segment there. by Jesse Waters. And I think you've all seen the giant sucking sound, not just headed south, headed east, headed west, headed north, you name it. But yet all the people who got America in this America last position are the ones who are, you know, trying to undermine President Trump in the midst of this fight right now. Message from Tom in Billings. Tom in Billings sent this message. Who wins the trade war with China? The country that plays the best long game. He says, and it ain't us. American citizens can vote to change the government. Chinese citizens have to sit and do what they're told. He says, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, that's the real question here, right? Is how badly do they need us, meaning us, the American consumers? Kevin in Belgrade sent us a message as well here. It's great that Governor Gianforte is in Washington, D.C., talking energy with the president. It's good to hear the positive news about coal and all forms and sources of electricity generation. With that being said, he says, I've noticed a significant increase in coal trains passing through Belgrade heading west. Where are they going? And who is buying all the coal before the tariffs all kick in? I'll bet a good chunk of that is going to Japan, Kevin. That's just you know, based off of the conversations I've had with experts on the show here, I would say a lot of that's probably going to Japan. Japan loves our coal. I'm trying to think. Let's just say let's keep a good thing rolling when it comes to coal and those coal trains too. And let's just say it's in the Japanese interest to keep that coal coming. As the governor pointed out yesterday on the show, and that means jobs for us, it means revenue for us, and so much more. Yeah, big announcement at the White House yesterday with President Trump. Senator Daines was there, Senator Sheehy was there, Governor Gianforte was there as President Trump announced some very good news for Montana and Wyoming coal producers. Maybe we'll get to talk about that more coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Holy cow, the time is flying by here. Let me do a quick minute of what Senator Steve Daines had to say in his opening remarks with the U.S. Trade Representative nominee.
I share the president's determination to end these unfair trade practices, whether they are tariffs or non-tariff barriers. I hope we can avoid an all-out trade war. A trade war will mean higher prices for the American consumer, because I think we could do a little thought exercise at the moment. Who pays these high tariffs? In the short, medium term, it will be the consumer. And so I'm worried about the inflationary effect. I'm worried if there is a trade war, that we're going to have markets shutting down for American farmers, ranchers, and manufacturers. I'll give you an example of that here in a moment. But I'm encouraged because the president's announcement has gotten the attention of a lot of countries. I was encouraged to see Kevin Hassett this morning talking about negotiation occurring, looking at President Trump's latest post on Truth Social, the fact that we've got Koreans now coming to the United States, literally dispatched to engage with us to lower these barriers, tariff and non-tariff, the Japanese and some 70 countries now that want to come and work and address the issues of the barriers for American companies, American producers doing businesses in their countries with
your morning cup of Sean. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
For 50 years, we're a bunch of suckers, and we've taken this, and Donald Trump says enough is enough, and says we want free and fair trade. We'll give you the choice, or if you choose the path of tariffs, then we're going to tariff you back. It's called reciprocal tariffs. And then if we're giving you money on top of it, then we might keep low tariffs on your country as a means of you helping to pay back American taxpayers that now have $37 trillion in debt. And that means we're robbing from our children and our grandchildren, and we'll be the first generation ever in the history of the country to leave the country worse off than that which we inherited. That can't happen.
The conservative underground meets later today on the Sean Hannity Show.
all of us need to be prepared to defend ourselves and our families, and we need to start with the less lethal option to avoid the legal complications associated with firearms. Byrner has their less lethal pistol launcher. It is equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammunition. It is designed to incapacitate any attacker for up to 40 minutes. Go to their website, BYRNA.com/Hannity. Right now, you'll get 10% off. Let me tell you this Byrner story. Bob was at home. An intruder physically forced his way inside. Now, luckily, Bob had just received his Byrner 4 days prior to this incident, and he used it to get the man outside and off of his property. Byrner, it's legal in all 50 states. There's no background check needed. It can be shipped directly to your door. Now, see the powerful technology that is Byrner. Go to their website, BYRNA.com/Hannity. Right now, you'll get 10% off. That's BYRNA.com/Hannity today. Day.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. Healthcare is increasingly expensive, but there are ways to save on health insurance. Health insurance marketplaces, including healthcare.gov and ehealth.com, offer websites where you can compare health insurance plans and pricing. Natasha Cantrell, a director for eHealth, says when checking out plans, don't focus solely on monthly premiums. She says that's the biggest mistake people make and overlook the out-of-pocket costs that come into play when you receive medical care. Plans with lower monthly premiums tend to come with higher annual deductibles, co-pays, or co-insurance. To keep your cost in check, it's important to stay in your health insurance company's provider network. And for any new health insurance plan you're considering, make sure it covers a doctor or hospital or pharmacy in your area that you want to continue using. And also note that if you do have out-of-pocket costs for a hospital or doctor's visit that you think are excessive, try to negotiate your bill. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
If you've got
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right back to this confirmation hearing for the U.S. Trade Representative yesterday. Senator Steve Daines was talking about how encouraged he was to see the Koreans, the Japanese, some 70 countries now coming to the United States saying, basically, hey, let's make a deal.
So this is very encouraging. I think that's in part why we're seeing the rebound today in the equity markets, because there's hope that these tariffs are a means and not solely an end. And if that's the case, I think we're on a really good path. This kind of tough position we're taking to actually solve some of these problems in barriers in trade that have been lingering for decades. And President Trump is taking bold leadership to address it, and I'm hoping for a good outcome. My hope is this is a sign of things to come, that these countries will offer major concessions and make historic trade deals with President Trump. Ambassador Greer, I encourage the administration, encourage you to use this opportunity to secure better terms with our partners, with our allies, to protect and grow American jobs, to grow access for our American farmers, our ranchers, our manufacturers, and American families. 3 weeks ago, I was in Hanoi and met with General Party Secretary Do Lam, the highest ranking official in Vietnam. And then I went to Beijing and met with high ranking Chinese officials, including the Premier Li Qiang. I carried President Trump's America First message directly to these leaders. I spoke with Premier Li Qiang and demanded that China stop the flow of the fentanyl precursors into Mexico, United States, and Canada. I raised concerns about developments related to the expiration of registrations for beef processing plants here in the United States and some non-science-based barriers, which has impacted Montana and U.S. beef exports. I want to remind you that in 2017, I went to China. I carried some steaks from a Montana rancher, Fred Wacker of Miles City, Montana. We met with the premier. In fact, I had one of your predecessors, Rob Portman, then the senator from Ohio and a former USDR with me. I had Senator Barrasso with me, Senator Kennedy with me. And as a result of that meeting, 30 days later, they lifted a 14-year ban on U.S. beef imports into China. Let me talk what that has meant so far. This is the largest beef export market in the world is now China. For U.S. producers of beef, in 2021, we shipped $1.6 billion of beef. Keep in mind, the 2017 number was $31 million. It was $2.1 billion in 22, $1.6 billion in 23, $1.6 billion in 24. But here's the concern. That's been shut off now in the last 3 weeks. March exports of beef to China, U.S. beef, declined 92%. So the valve is shut right now for U.S. beef producers. My question is, what can we do to hold China's commitment to U.S. beef and other ag imports, which are so critical right now for U.S. producers?
Thank you, Senator, and you've always been a leader on this, and I appreciate that. China, of course, needs to take down their barriers. It's been a persistent challenge with them, and they like to use economic coercion, and they have their own method of doing things. But my hope would be is that they turn back on this course of action. I think President Trump is focused on making sure we have the right program in place, that we're dealing with partners who are going to be respectful and achieve reciprocity with us. And I think a lot of this is going to be up to the Chinese on how forward-leaning they want to be on having fair trade with us.
All right. Yeah. And, of course, it was President Trump was a huge part of opening up that market to American beef in the first place through his tough actions. But what about the freaking Europeans? I mean, China's one thing, but the Europeans have been blocking our beef. That's the beef we got with those guys as well, especially after all we do for them.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
The stock market is not the economy, certainly. Its euphoria and gloom are dramatic and well-publicized. The changes in the overall economy can't be boiled down to a simple number and take weeks or more to show up in data. For all the talk of trillions of wealth being wiped out in recent days, there have been equally eye-popping changes on the upside during the market's bull run before that. In reality, of course, those gyrations are just numbers on a page, with concrete meaning only if the assets they represent are liquidated. Lower or even dramatically lower stock prices don't put people out of work, and the connection between portfolio values and current spending is nowhere near as strong as some make it out to be. But the market is a sentiment index on the immediate future, and its precipitous fall warns us of just how much those sentiments have changed, for the worse. It is people and institutions voting with dollars on where they think the return on those assets is greatest, and right now that is anywhere but in shares of U.S. companies. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.